This lesson is all about leavening, which is a little bit like magic because when you combine leavening agents with all of the new ingredients you're now acquainted with, you'll feel like a gluten-free baking magician. So, let's add more to your bag of tricks, shall we? What is leavening? When baking gluten-free muffins, quick breads, cookies, and cakes, to achieve airy lift in the final product, we need to use ingredients that leaven, which simply means to raise and puff up. There are two main ways you can do this, with chemical leavening agents or biological leavening agents. Biological leavening agents have been around long before humans. They're yeasts and beneficial bacteria, and over the years, humans have fine-tuned how they're cultivated and used for bread baking. Compared to biological leavening, chemical leavening is a more recent approach to baking, and it's one that's considered the more quick and easy route to bake goods. Let's further explain the two approaches. Chemical leavening. For non-yeasted breads, we catalyze a light and airy breadcrumb with chemical reactions by combining acids and bases. And as with most things in life, it's all about balance. Too much chemical leavening can weaken the structure or texture of a baked good and alter its flavor. Too much can taste soapy, while too little can result in sunken bread tops and sticky centers. You're probably familiar with baking soda, which is alkaline, right? In school, you may even remember combining it with vinegar, which is an acid, and watching it foam up. Well, those tiny bubbles are carbon dioxide gas, and they nestle in with the other ingredients in a bread, adding that coveted lift to baked goods. It's important to remember to act fast when using chemical leavening, because as you may remember with that school experiment, the baking soda vinegar reaction only lasts so long. When baking bread, be sure to have all ingredients ready, pans greased or lined, the oven fully preheated, and spoons and oven mitts close by when you combine the final wet and dry ingredients together and then transfer to a baking pan. The more you dally, the more that sweet bubble action floats away into the air, and since we're not using gluten to help us trap it and create lift, time is of the essence. Acids. Common acidic ingredients used in baking are citrus fruits like lemon, lime, orange, and grapefruit, chocolate, cocoa and cacao powders, cacao is raw and cocoa is roasted, coffee, sweeteners like honey and molasses, vinegars like apple cider, white and balsamic, applesauce, and buttermilks, which you can make dairy-free by combining 1 cup of nut milk with 1 teaspoon of apple cider vinegar. Baking powder. Baking powder is the perfect balanced package of acid and base. It's a mixture of sodium bicarbonate, also known as baking soda, which is alkaline. An acidifying agent, usually cream of tartar, which is a byproduct of wine fermentation, and a drying agent, cornstarch, potato starch, or wheat starch. So if you have a serious gluten allergy, buy gluten-free baking powder. Make sure to always buy aluminum-free baking powder as well, since aluminum is linked to many health issues. Baking powder requires mixing with wet ingredients and/or heat from the oven to work its magic. But unlike baking soda, it doesn't need an added acid to react with because it already has its own acid in the mix. It breaks down like this. Sometimes you'll see fast-acting baking powder, which means that it reacts at room temperature. With slow-acting baking powder, it won't react until it reaches a certain temperature in the oven. Double-acting baking powder does a bit of reacting outside of the oven and some inside as well, so both bases are covered. This is the type of baking powder most commonly found. If a baking powder doesn't have any of these labels on it, it's pretty safe to assume that it's double acting. Baking powder is powerful stuff, and you don't want to add too much of it because it can add an unpleasant, peppery, metallic, or soapy flavor to baked goods. Test its freshness. Since baking powder is activated by a combo of heat and moisture, test it by putting a 1/4 teaspoon into a glass and fill it with a splash of hot water. It should produce lots of bubbles if it's fresh. If not, it's time for a new box, or using it could result in deflated baked goods. If your breads sink after baking, old baking powder could be the culprit. Baking soda. While baking powder contains acid and base, baking soda is only base. So baking soda is used in recipes that contain liquids and acids because it needs them both to react. But unlike double-acting baking powder, it doesn't need the heat of the oven to create carbon dioxide gas. Browning is achieved best when a recipe is more alkaline, so using baking soda can help achieve this pH. Baking soda is 4 times as strong as baking powder, and you may be familiar with the general rule of thumb in conventional baking that 1/4 teaspoon of baking soda per cup of flour is needed, while 1 to 1 1/4 teaspoon of baking powder is needed per cup of flour. When gluten-free baking, however, you'll see that these amounts increase a bit because we don't have gluten helping us create lift, but amounts shouldn't go higher than a particular recipe calls for. Test its freshness. It almost always comes in a cardboard box, so transfer it to an airtight glass container for longer leavening power, if you like. If you suspect that your baking soda may be losing potency, put a sprinkle in a dish and add a squeeze of lemon or a drop of apple cider vinegar. If you see bubbles, it's okay. If not, it's time to buy more or your baked goods could deflate. Using both baking powder and baking soda. Some recipes use both baking powder and baking soda. This is because the recipe likely contains an acid ingredient or 3 already, but the gas created during the chemical reaction between the ingredient and baking soda isn't enough to lift the entire recipe. This is often the case with gluten-free baking, so our pal baking powder is added to step in and provide some extra oomph. Biological leavening. Yeast is a living organism in the same family as mushrooms. That's right, it's a hungry little fungus that's pretty much essential for making risen breads and crusty sandwich loaves. See, yeast feeds on the flour, and as it eats, it creates the carbon dioxide gas that makes bread lift, yielding that coveted, soft fluffiness we want when we bite into a sandwich. Yeast also adds a complex flavor to baked goods. You can use store-bought active dry yeast, also known as instant yeast, to leaven bread in 1 to 2 hours, or you can borrow from ancient traditions and make your own starter, culturing it over time. Making your own sourdough bread not only tastes incredible, but it connects you to process and tradition. The result is easier to digest, it contains healthy gut bacteria like lactobacillus, and it's less likely to go stale quickly because it retains moisture and the acids in the loaf keep mold away. Let's learn a bit more about the differences between store-bought yeast and wild yeast. Store-bought yeast, also known as active dry yeast or instant yeast, store-bought commercial yeast, which is usually a culture of Saccharomyces cerevisiae, gets to work on dough quickly, making bread rise and ready to bake in a matter of minutes to hours. It's the yeast of choice for many home bakers, professional bakers, and food companies because its results are more consistent and it works quickly. And hey, many of us love fast, quick, and easy. As you get your bearings with bread baking, when using a commercial yeast, labels like granulated, active dry, instant, quick rise, or bread machine yeast all work with the recipes in this course. A few tips. Never add boiling, scalding, or hot water to a recipe with yeast. You'll kill it. Warm water is best, and cold will actually slow down the fermentation process. Like you, yeast is alive, so to remember what it likes, think about yourself. Would you prefer boiling water, cold water, or warm water poured over the inside of your wrist? Thought so. Warm water. Store yeast in the fridge for longer shelf life. Freezing yeast and then freezing and thawing and then freezing again can compromise yeast cells and it won't be as powerful, especially with organic yeast. If using an organic store-bought yeast, rising times for dough may have to be doubled, even quadrupled, which is really just a sign that you're getting a little closer to how nature intended things to be. Speaking of, starter. In the simplest terms, starter, also known as a sponge, is a fermented mix of flour, water, and wild bacteria and yeasts. Depending on what stage of fermentation and feeding the starter is in, it can then be referred to as a pre-ferment or pre-dough, levain or leaven, or sourdough starter. Starter of all kinds has a bit more of a, let's just say, less predictable personality. Bacteria and yeasts are wild after all. In order to use them, you need to catch and cultivate them, consistently maintain, monitor, and feed them. Here's a quick breakdown of some of the common names for starter, and as you'll see, why the names can be interchanged quite a bit depending on technique and timing. All of them are flour, water, and microorganisms. Technically, all of them are pre-ferments or started as pre-ferments. Pre-ferment, also known as pre-dough, It's a single-use, quickly-made starter cultivated with wild yeast and bacteria, a pinch of active dry yeast, or some sourdough starter. The flour used can be a blend of many or one singular flour. Pre-ferment is usually considered a young, single-use starter. The ingredients are mixed up, ferments for an hour or days, and you can use it all for your loaf. Of course, you can turn a pre-ferment into a sourdough starter and maintain it for long periods of time with multiple feedings. A pre-ferment is one way to start a sourdough starter. Levain, also known as leaven. Whether it comes from a quick pre-ferment or a long-maintained sourdough starter, levain is a French term used to describe a starter that has recently been fed and is ready to use. It's bubbly and it's active. The longer levain ferments, the more mature and sour the flavors. The less time it ferments, the less sour and young it is considered. Sourdough starter is a mature starter that once began as a pre-ferment, and thanks to multiple feedings, monitoring, and maintenance, it now can provide leavening for countless loaves of bread for years, even generations. You feed a portion of a sourdough starter, reserving some and feeding it for future loaves of bread. In another course, we practice these techniques in depth so you can become familiar with the nuance and possibilities of starter. But in this course, we'll work with sourdough starter, also known as wild yeast starter, which is a mixture of flour, water, and microorganisms that is maintained long-term for weeks to years. This can be the most challenging and most rewarding approach to wild bread leavening. Your sourdough starter will provide many loaves of bread for years to come if you care for it. We'll teach you how and why. Starter leaven bread was likely discovered by accident, as many great things are, when someone mixed together grains and water and left the mixture out in the warm air long enough that wild yeasties and bacteria floating on a breeze, and or already on the grains, nestled in and started to munch on the mix. The byproduct of this microscopic feast was carbon dioxide, which made the dough rise up and smell delicious. In the oven it went, and from then on, folks were wild fermenting dough and capturing yeasts and bacteria in starters that they could maintain for years and generations even. This bread mash, also known as a mother, can also be preserved by freezing or dehydrating it for use decades later. As long as there's a food source for the yeast, carbohydrates and sugars in the grains, you can continue to grow it and use it for baking if you simply feed it. For years, master artisanal bakers have cultured, preserved, and used their own wild yeast starters for golden, delicious, crusty breads, but there's no reason you can't use these ancient techniques too. For those of us without a passed-down family sourdough starter, it's easy as stirring together flour and water and letting it sit on the counter. You can buy sourdough starters or create starters with mashed grapes or fermented potato water to get a lively dough going. A few raisins in the mix will also get it going. You just need a bit of curiosity and patience. Sourdough-started bread, like many great things, also takes a bit more time. We'll go in-depth for this process and other surprising wild yeast techniques in Module 4. Well, congrats! At this point in the module, you now have been acquainted with all the major player ingredients you'll be using throughout this entire course. Make sure you take that lesson recap to help all the new info stick like a soaked chia seed. Okay then, see you in the next lesson!